tragic accident changed the course of his life forever. For most, it would have begun a life of discontent and wallowing around in self-misery. For Jonathan Nadeau, it kickstarted a new chapter of inspiration and appreciation. Even though he lost his sight permanently, he gained a passion to put creativity first in all areas of his life. And now, he wants to encourage you to do the same. There are times when you'll be faced with a choice. Be crushed by the weight of the situation, or use the fresh start to rebound bigger, better, and more inspired than ever before. This is Tornado, stories of those who refuse to choose defeat and instead chose to embrace the storm. Here's your host, Jonathan Nadeau.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to Embrace Your Storm. My name is Jonathan Nadeau. I'm your host. And as always, we've got an awesome episode. We are going to be speaking with Brayden, and he's got a short film that's going to be in the festival here called I Loved Her First. And don't forget the film festival, the Tornado Music and Film Festival, is going to be at Foxwoods Casino August 26th, 27th, and 28th. So we expect all of you to be there. We can't wait to see you. And Brayden, thanks for coming on. And tell us, how did you even start getting involved into making films? Because it's funny that you said before the interview, you come from a place in Alberta where everyone thinks you have to be like rich and famous in order to make a movie. So how did you get involved? How did you start doing this?
I got involved and started doing this when I was around 13 or 14. I had a film class in junior high school. And I wanted to make a Halo fan film with all my friends. This is the year that Halo 4 was just coming out, you know, really hyped to see Master Chief's next journey. And we all wanted to make a Halo fan film. So there's a few friends and I making like cardboard suits and whatnot. And we started going around to different places to try to find props. And I needed a better camera. So like I went to Best Buy in the city to try to find a camera. And this dude was telling me about not only the camera, but this cool Star Wars short film he was working on.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, it's called Darth Bane, Path of Destruction. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. As I was familiar with the Darth Bane books. And I was like, that sounds pretty sweet. Best of luck on your project. Bought a little camcorder. And when I came back to my hometown, because we went to Edmonton to go and do this, go and find the camera.
Nice.
So we went back to my hometown, which is a few hours away from Edmonton. We were looking for more props. And so we went into a thrift store. And I was talking to the owner, and he was telling me about him, how him and his buddies are making a Star Wars film.
I think I see where this is going.
And I was just like, that's so funny. I was just talking to a guy at Edmonton that I met at Best Buy about this. And then I'm like, I think his name was Nathan. And he's just like, yeah, you know Nathan. And I'm just like, well, now I do, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Small world. And,
yeah. And then I was like, well, best of luck on the project. And my buddy Jason Thompson, he showed it to him. He's just so sweet and amazing. So him and I became like good friends over the course of a few weeks. And we were trying to make this Halo fan film, which just did not work out at all. Like, we didn't really get to shoot it because we were just planning it. And, you know, young filmmakers, we try to go over the top. We're like, how are we going to make the grunts work? The drop pods.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's just like all these Hollywood VFX that we can't even pull off for $5. And so we kind of just scrapped it. And then I got a call from Jason going, hey, man, you want to be a PA on the Star Wars short film? And so I was like, sure. So carpooled with him to Edmonton. We shot this awesome Star Wars fan film. We had like a $20,000 budget.
No kidding.
Yeah. If anybody wants to check it out, it's called Darth Bane Path of Destruction fan film on YouTube by JD Buzz and Century Arc Entertainment. Absolutely cool. Fantastic visual effects and everything.
No kidding.
Yeah. Like, so we were there. Like, immediately in the morning, I went and introduced myself to the director because, you know, very small crew. And the third AD wasn't able to make it that day. So he's like, hey, kid, you want to be an AD? And I'm like, what's an AD? He's like, you're going to learn. And so I went to go introduce myself to the cast, and the hair and makeup artists were just passing on information to me, going like, yeah, they'll be done in 10 minutes. I'm like, okay. And then I was basically just copying that, went right up to the first AD. He's like, yeah, they said they'll be done in about 10 minutes. And I was just passing on information, and I had no idea that I was doing an AD job correct.
Right.
And ever since then, I've been kind of like working in the industry, like doing my own stuff.
That's funny.
I think my biggest step though into like the union world was like all throughout high school, I was, you know, trying to get more and more into the film industry, to the point where I lied, to my parents and got my own, acting agent. I got my own headshots and everything done by my, photography teacher in school.
Nice.
And we did up a resume. I submitted it to agencies, and I ended up getting picked up by a Calgary agency. And
funny.
I booked some featured background days on a TV show called Heartland.
Oh, yeah.
For season 10. And so I was doing like featured background. But on my first day, when I got the call that they wanted to book me, I was like, okay, cool. I'm like, see you guys tomorrow. And we're shooting in Calgary. And my hometown is 4.5 hours away from Calgary.
Oh, no.
So as a 14-year-old who does not drive.
Right. Whose parents don't know if yeah. he's an actor.
That's
funny, dude.
That was a problem. So I talked to my parents about it, and I'm like, no, Dad, I'll get my agent to call you. And he's just like, sure, you have an agent. Yeah, are they your manager too? I'm like, yes, but that's not the point.
That is funny, man. That is so funny. So did you end up going and recording on the show?
Yeah, we ended up going and recording on the show.
Nice.
Like the episode aired a few months later, and like people, even though I had no lines, just when they see me on TV with the cast and stuff like that, because I was like literally right beside all the main cast for a lot of the stuff, and was reoccurring in that sort of aspect, where they're just like, you're actually on TV.
Right. That's pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But it got to the point where I was on set too much, to the point where like, we had to have a conversation about me passing.
Yeah, like school and everything, right?
Yeah, they're just like, because like I was getting caught up in everything. But for drama class,
I mean, rightly so.
Yeah, like for drama class, I had a 100% mark. And my teacher would always mark me as present.
That's funny. And, like, yep, he's doing drama. He's all set.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like when him and I talked about it, he's like, what am I going to do? Fail you for actually being on set?
Right. Yeah, no, seriously.
So my school, luckily, was very, very accommodating.
That's cool.
And they had like their own studio too. So my friends and I would go out and make short films.
So how long were you like on set then? Like doing that?
It was a good like few months, but it wasn't like in a row. It was like every now and again. And between that, I did some background work on Fargo season 2.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
Went on to ERP season 2 as well.
Nice. Yeah. So you were just busy. Like, you know, once you got the bug and you got in, you just kind of got busy.
Oh, exactly. I got really, really busy. And like that was my first step into kind of like the bigger world. And during this time in high school, my friend Marissa and I, who's one of the producers and one of the like the main writer of I Loved Her First.
Yeah.
Her and I had like a rivalry because she's from like a redneck town in the middle of nowhere in Saskatchewan. And like we met through Air Cadets, and we were just kind of like, we had this rivalry going, like the two drama student rivalries. And she was like, hey, Braden, I got accepted into a private drama school in Vancouver, where there's only like a few students in each class, which like there's a few classes and it's only like 10 students each.
Yeah. So you get bragging rights if you get accepted.
Yeah. And so I was just like, oh, you think that beats me being on TV? Well, guess what? I'm like, okay, congrats. And then I ignored her for 3 days. During those 3 days, I went through the application process. I did my audition. I got accepted.
No kidding.
And so I sent her a photo of the acceptance letter and everything. And I'm like, guess what? We might be in the same class.
Oh, man, that is so funny.
And then after that, I kind of settled down and just went, I have to move to Vancouver now and go to acting school.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. So moved, did acting school. Honestly, it was great because it helped me like not only discover more about myself, become a better actor, but that's kind of where I shifted more into directing.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it's kind of funny how it worked out that way. It brought you, it brought you in, like, sort of into the city, right? And then there's obviously more going on in Vancouver than where there's a population of 8,000. And so it really kind of kicked you into high gear.
Oh, exactly. Like, it was, like, extremely high gear, and it kept going from there. Like, once I graduated from school creative, I kind of, like, had nowhere to go or what to do. Like, I was living with my girlfriend at the time. And, like, she was super supportive, which I was very lucky for. So I was just kind of volunteering to try to, you know, build my name and get my name out there. Like, I did a short film as, like, a key PA called Cloaks and Daggers.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's so many amazing people on that short film, and is very, like, it was a short made from, like, a lot of passion. So I, like, you know, became good friends with people on that set, and then I volunteered at a similar film festival, which is, like, I volunteered at a film festival called the Vancouver Web Fest as a camera operator.
That's cool.
And I met this guy named Steve Kammerer. He's a director and producer here in Vancouver who's absolutely sweet. He did an amazing short film called Ada, which I highly recommend. I actually worked on Ada.
Is it about Ada Lovelace?
It is.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Yeah, it's won a ton of awards. Like, I also won, like, the Stage 32 awards. And
well, I'm already a fan of it, so
I'd highly recommend checking it out. Anyhow, yeah, Steve basically noticed some of my talent, and I was a camera operator. And he was just like, hey, I'm actually, like, you seem like a hard worker. I'm crewing up on a Disney movie.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, cool. He's like, I'm an ALM. And at that time, I had no idea what that meant, which is assistant location manager. So yeah, I thought he was, like, really high up on the chain, you know?
Right, right.
And I was just like, is that some sort of producer? Like, what the heck? Like, that's huge. And then he's like, do you want to be a PA? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm like, what's the Disney movie called? He's like, oh, I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it's called Kim Possible.
Dude, that is so funny. Like, yeah. Talk about just being some people say, oh, it's like the right place at the right time or whatever, but it's just funny hearing your path. Like, it's all this stuff isn't, like, circumstantial kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's way too much of a, you know, coincidence for all these things to line up for you. You know, it's just funny how it all unfolded that way for you.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, the more I tell you, the more insane it's going to sound, because, like, everything, like, this is kind of, like, an example of also building your own path, and, like, right. if you stay on that path, like, the universe and life will provide.
Dude, thank you very much. That, no, seriously, because that right there, what you just said, that is what inhibits Tornado, my nonprofit, and this festival. Like, follow your path. Like, I believe everyone has a creative inkling in them. Follow that thing. And if you're on the right thing, everything, like you just said, it's all going to unfold exactly how it should. Like, that's how you know you're on the right path.
Exactly. You know? And it's honestly incredible. Like, after I got the job on Kim Possible and had, like, an amazing time, like, originally I was only booked for, like, it was like 10 or 12 days out of the entire shoot. They kept me for 32.
Wow. No kidding.
And
so you were actually doing the camp. No, wait, you weren't doing the camera work. You were just, like, a PA and stuff, right?
Yeah, I was a locations PA.
Okay. But still, that's awesome.
Yeah, okay. That was a weird shoot because, like, you know, when you're new in the industry and whatnot, you're always scared of getting fired.
Right. And you don't want to do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing or whatever. Yeah,
like, you don't want to talk to the cast at all. You're, like, you know, avoiding eye contact. but since I was the only one close to any of the cast's age, they kept trying to talk to me.
That's funny.
And so, like, I was always trying to get out of the way of the grips, moving the stands, and, like, that sort of stuff. And then Sean Giambroni from the Goldbergs, who played Ron, he'd, like, try to get out of the way. So him and I are both trying to get out of the way, and he's trying to get to the green room. And so then, like, we just start talking, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to get fired. But Sean and Sadie and, Sean, Sadie and I, and, like, we became, like, pretty good friends by the end of the shoot. I just didn't tell my boss. We kept it all a secret.
Yeah.
Like, Sean and I went and hung out downtown on a weekend, and we literally went to Best Buy, and he was looking at like DVD covers of the Goldbergs.
That's funny.
And, like, we're making jokes. So, like, yeah, if you went up to, like, the front counter and tried to buy it, do you think they'd recognize you?
No, dude, that's what's funny. Like, a lot of people would assume, oh, you probably can't go anywhere in public, but out of context, people probably like take double or triple takes, like, wait a minute, is that that looks kind of like, you know what I'm saying? So you probably can get away with a lot of actually going out in public.
Oh, you could. And like Sean is also like the sweetest. Like he knew we weren't allowed to take photos on set.
Yeah.
And so on the last day, he got like our entire locations team together and like all his favorite crew members. And he took photos on his phone of, like, with everybody, and then he sent the movies to the rest of the crew.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really cool to know people are down to earth like that.
Yeah, he's super sweet. Like, honestly, Kim Possible was like a life-changing event for me.
Well, and I believe that, it.
Like, that's where I also met, like, Zach Lepofsky.
Oh, no kidding.
Like, Zach just had, like, a huge festival film a few years ago, which got distribution and whatnot, called Freaks, which is currently on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Zach was one of the directors of Kim Possible, and then I co-produced a ULB, like, an ultra-low-budget feature that he was one of the producers on, like, shortly afterwards.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and, like, I kind of just kept working as a PA and working my way up. Like, I ended up getting, like, a job on, like, a Hallmark Channel movie after that.
Okay, so because we were talking earlier about a lot of the Hallmarks, but now I see how you got tied into all that.
Yeah, like, so my buddy Al Dales and I were PAing together, and, like, we kept, like, you know, kind of working together. And we moved up through the locations department, and then I was back and forth from ADing and locations because I started ADing for Hallmark and like whatnot. But what I was at first for Hallmark, I was a AD for 8 days, and then I got poached by Warner Brothers.
Okay.
by my good buddy Eddie Hardy. He's a great second AD, like absolutely amazing and just a truly wonderful human being. Got the call because he remembered me from Kim Possible.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And he heard I'm ADing now. And so I ended up getting a job on Batwoman season one.
No kidding.
As a as an on-set third AD, also known, like, in the States, that'd be an equivalent to, because we had a what we call a trainee assistant director.
Mm.
And so like my job was to help the first AD run that and then set and direct all the background.
Okay.
And so that's like an equivalent to, in the States, I think it's a synth second.
Okay.
And so I did that for almost the entirety of season one on Batwoman.
Wow, man, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, like, you know how crazy it is? Just like, this all happened like in the span of like a year and a half, not even, from me moving out of my hometown.
Wow. Like, and so, it all comes down to, though, also is like you executing, or you taking those steps. You know what I'm saying? Like, you had to take the steps and kind of keep moving forward, but as you're moving, you're able to be guided through life and have those things unfold before you. And not to make it sound like, oh, if you're on the right path, you don't have any issues or you know, problems. You have struggles. I mean, you said how you like were living with your girlfriend, and she was kind of, I mean, not putting words in your mouth, but sort of, you know, not supporting you, but helping you kind of stay true to what you want to do, you know? So times get hard, but then you get things like this that unfold, you know, unfold on your path, you know?
Oh, exactly. And then, like, when COVID hit, that was, like, a tough time for, like, you know, everybody. And, like, Batwoman shut down. Like, I remember waking up in the morning and getting a bunch of text messages from my friends going, oh my gosh, Batwoman shut down. Like, are you okay? And I was just, like, we found this out from Deadline.
Oh, geez.
And I was just, like, I got the call sheet last night. I'm, like, we're not shut down. Like, we're not. Then I go into, like, the production chat going, are we shooting today? And they're, like, yeah, come to set. I'm, like, okay. And then we shot like for half the day and shut down. We were just trying to finish up an episode.
You're trying to squeeze out as much as you could.
Yeah. And like, just basically, and then like, we'll call everybody back when this passes over. And then next thing you know, nobody got really called back until like season two.
Man.
But at that point, I was doing other things, and like, I did a few days on season three, but,
okay, then.
Yeah. So like that happened, and like my relationship that I was in at the time didn't work out. So I basically, like, you know, lost my job, being an AD on a cool Warner Brothers show.
Right.
And like lost my long-term like relationship at the time. And I was just like, had no idea what to do. I put all my stuff in storage.
So COVID really hit you then.
Oh yeah. Like,
yeah,
I had no idea what to do. And like most of us, so I put my stuff in storage, and I ended up flying back to Alberta, to my hometown. And I only had a suitcase and my camera bag full of my camera gear, like my Blackmagic Pocket 4K kit.
Yeah.
And I promised myself that I'm not moving back to British Columbia until I have a feature film shot.
Okay.
Even if it's Robert Rodriguez style.
There you go.
And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Nice. And so that's what brought you to, is that I Loved Her First? Is that what that is?
No.
Oh, okay.
I Loved Her First is a, like a whole other story, but like, okay. I directed two feature films. One of them is called Darker Than Night, which that one we made during COVID for 12K.
Okay.
And we did like 17 shooting days. We had like a full blown stunt team, and
oh wow,
it's a nice little movie, and it should be fully done soon. There's lots of delays because of, you know, paying your people very low. You're kind of it's more of an honorarium and on their own time sort of deal.
Yeah, I hear ya.
But like Darker Than Night one looked absolutely beautiful. Like we had like a full team, and like the production value we got out of it, it's honestly quite crazy. Like we had stunt doubles, we had wires, we had drones, we had full crews, we had catering. We put like literally everybody up in a hotel for a few weeks.
No kidding.
And the hotel guy gave it to us for like $40 a night per
well,
room.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Nobody was staying there. And
no
he even made us breakfast every morning. Like, so like, it was just like a great, like, team building experience. And then afterwards we did Darker Than Night 2, which had, I think we spent like 75,000 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
According to the IMDb.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure how much like it actually cost. But that one we actually had you know, a bit of a bigger budget, and we actually made that one a union production for Extra.
Okay.
And so we had some like bigger actors, like we had Jesse Lipscomb from Netflix's Black Summer.
That's cool.
We had Paula Barrows. She's from The Dragon Prince on Netflix. She plays Rayla.
Nice.
And like we had like a bunch of other actors. Like we were even flying some out from Vancouver and that sort of thing. So we filmed that this summer, and that's kind of where I just kind of went back to making Hallmark movies and such. Like after we wrapped, like just to backtrack a bit, just because I'm trying to get to I Loved Her First. After we finished Darker Than Night one, I flew back to Vancouver and just kept, you know, went back to normal, like just AD'd, went and did Darker Than Night 2, and just kind of like was AD'ing between all that. I started wanting to get into AFI as a director, just because I had some like short film experience and music video experience. But I was starting to like lose jobs because people had like actual film school.
Oh, right.
And it was like, there was a few instances where they're like, yeah, well, you two were both like equally as good, but we took this other person because they had a bit more training, even though we're both Directors Guild of Canada members, but it's just like, okay. And so I've been doing like a lot more research, and you know, since AFI is like supposed to be top tier,
yeah,
I was like, all right, let's shoot for that. And so I started prepping with Marissa, because she's a screenwriter now, and she was in like screenwriting classes and whatnot. And so I was like, hey, I want to make a short film, but nothing depressing. And I'm like, here are my rules, because there's like the stereotype short films, you know, of like new filmmakers, like it's about like suicide and depression,
right?
Like anxiety, bullying, and try to make a difference. I find that to be like the big mistakes of for short films, is like immediately trying to make this very artistic, mind-opening piece, which, don't get me wrong, some people can pull off, but it's very hard to do, especially
because a short film, you got a tight amount of time. And you have to be pretty good at getting your point across in a short amount of time.
Exactly. And they also miss out on the character development and like the full story arcs and building.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they try to be a lot more artsy. And they're like, oh, well, there's like Kubrick did it and Spielberg did it for these certain things, so why can't I? And it's just like, you're not those people. You need to find your own signature. You need to be your own person.
Exactly.
So we basically just kept going back and forth, and I'm like, I want something like Hallmarky, because if I'm going to spend like a lot of money on it, I want to be able to put it on my reel and try to get work down here.
Right.
And something like heartwarming that will pull somebody's strings. Like the whole father-daughter dynamic is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like in recent years, like from what we've seen in Logan and like The Last of Us and like just a bunch of others, like it seems to be like, that's kind of where that market's at.
Mm.
If you're going to do something like father-daughter, it's really that relationship between the two that will really pull people. So we decided on I Loved Her First, And then we just kind of went back and forth with the script until we found a version that we both like, you know, really liked. And then it came to shooting, and we pulled off like the entire short film for like $4,000 Canadian, which is like 3.2K US.
Okay.
And we like, I even had a Hallmark director of photography.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, my buddy Justin. Which Man. Did an absolute fantastic job with the short. It looks beautiful. Like, we even shot it on a red. We had a dolly. Like, we pulled out, like, all the bells and whistles.
Nice. Because, yeah, because the whole point of this was you were submitting this to AFI, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, and I was working on a Lifetime movie at the time called The Cruel Instruction.
Okay.
As an AD. And basically, I was, like, just grinding away even more so to try to get an AFI because our director is actually, like, an instructor at AFI.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like we had no idea about this. And so I was just like, oh, like that's crazy. And so like he was aware about it, and our DP was also a AFI alumni from the Cinematography Conservatory. So and our director is part of the producing and conservatory.
Oh, wow. So were they able to get you in then? Or like with recommendations and stuff?
No, but okay. But they did give me some very good pointers and advice, which I'll be definitely taking into account because I still want to go. Awesome. But just from like statistics and whatnot, like a very funny thing happened where I wasn't actually able to apply to AFI in the end. Like, we're grinding for the short film to be done in time. Like, everything was done on time, except for I needed an English exam because I'm technically an international student.
Okay.
And so I took it on Duolingo, and my results didn't come in on time.
Oh no.
And they wouldn't give me an extension or anything.
Oh man.
Like I told our director and whatnot, and he was like, let me see what I can do. He couldn't like really do anything. And like he's like, well, did you email them about it? I'm like, yeah, but they told me no, and better luck next year for it.
Man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, and we were kind of having a good laugh at it because I don't know about you, but I think I can speak English.
well yeah, that's why I'm kind of like I thought you were going to say like, whatever, like something crazy like that. And it was going to get overturned, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I'm like, I have this short film, which turned out absolutely beautiful. I'm still going to submit it to festivals.
Yeah. We'll give a quick like kind of synopsis so they can kind of hear what it's about.
All right. Like a quick kind of synopsis about I Loved Your First is it's about a young woman during her wedding day, where she's like having second thoughts about basically, you know, growing up, since this is a huge step in every person's life. And her father gives her some good words of wisdom, but about not how only she's grown, but how he's grown up, and how basically like the hardest part of raising a child is watching them grow up and how they're growing up together.
That's very cool. It's really insightful. It's neat.
Yeah, and like basically like the whole story about it is even on like the verge of a huge life-changing event like this and something that's scary, is you just have to jump into it and see what journey the future holds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very cool. Braden, I mean, your story is pretty awesome, and I love the work that you're doing. So is there anything else you're working on in the future, anything you're working on now you want to talk about or mention or need help with?
There's quite a few projects. There's a feature film that is currently shooting that I'm a co-producer on called Parallel Forest, starring Edwin and Eldis Hodge.
Oh, no kidding.
And directed by Kru Shahari. So when that comes out, I highly suggest everyone to check it out. It's a remake of the classic Parallel Forest film.
What's that going to be out on?
I believe last time I checked, they're trying for a theatrical release.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, because the Hodge brothers are some pretty decent names in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Aldous has a big movie coming out shortly called Black Adam with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No kidding.
Yeah. Aldous is playing Hawkman.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
So there's that coming out. Then, of course, Dark of the Night 1 and 2. There's still like quite a few projects. Like, there's a short film that's going into festivals soon. Well, three. One of them's called Jane, which is based on the girl from The Yellow Wallpaper. Then there's one called Through the Mirror, which I did with my buddy Jeff Evans Todd. And then there's another one that I did with Jeff called Forever Friend. And then Jeff and I are working on a few others right now together. Like I'm always so busy.
That's a good thing.
super good thing. Like I'm a firm believer that you have to make your own opportunities in order for other people to offer you with your own, like offer with bigger opportunities and such.
No, like, yeah, absolutely, dude. 100%.
Like when I was on Jane, you know, this little short film that we did, and I was a producer on that. And then as soon as we finished that, some time passed by, I got a call from my friend Giovanna, who you know, was on Jane as Jane and whatnot. And she's just like, "Hey, we have a bigger production coming. Do you want to be part of it?" I'm like, "Heck yeah." And I'm like, "What's the budget?" And she's just like, "It's a few million."
Nice. There you go.
And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And so yeah. I've been working on Parallel Forest. Yeah, like honestly, there's just so much, and it's just all about creating your own opportunities and keeping yourself busy, because regardless of what happens, is that you're still sharpening your creative mindset and your tools, and you're getting real material, you're making those connections. And that's honestly like the most important thing. Like all my union jobs that I've got, even for ADing, is just by making a connection. But like all these bigger opportunities that have made bigger differences in my life, like that's changed it a lot in my career, is from these small shorts and indies that I've done, like other people's passion projects.
And it sounds like you put yourself out there too. Like if you're working on a project, you'd be like, "Oh, hey, so-and-so," you know, like you, like you said, you put yourself into opportunities. You line yourself up with that for people to see you. And that's exactly what you have to do. Like my ex-wife used to tell me, like, "It's so annoying when you do things like that." I'm like, "Why?" Like, because no one can do one thing on their own. Like there's always somebody out there that's either going to be, you know, meant to help you in some way, shape or form, or, you know what I'm saying? Or whatever, like, or you're meant to help out someone else or whatever. Like we're not meant to like travel this totally alone. You know what I'm saying? And so you have to have that attitude that you have, is like by putting yourself in front of people and getting those opportunities, you know?
Exactly. And even just like help train people who aren't filmmakers, if they want to try it, to do it, give those other people those opportunities. Cause you never know what connections they're going to make and that sort of thing. Like my poor girlfriend, she's a accidental camera assistant and a bunch of other stuff. The reason I say accidental is because like, well, I film lots of like nature videos and like that sort of stuff. And so we'll be like sitting like in the bush and I'm trying to get a video of the squirrels and I want to swap out a lens. So I'll be like kind of whisper yelling at her. I'm like, "Hand me the 50 mil, hand me the 50 mil." Or I'll be doing a camera movement and I'm like, "Pull focus, here you go." She's like, "I don't know what that means." And I'm like, that's soft. That's soft. Sharpen it up. Come on.
That's funny, man. But you know what though? That's cool that she's like right there along with you being like, "All right, I don't know what you're saying, but I'll try." You know what I'm saying? Like that's what it takes though to be open for stuff like that.
Yeah. And like, she's super supportive and I'm very grateful for like when her and I first started dating, I was like, "I don't date anybody within the film industry." And she's like, "That's fine. I don't work in the film industry."
And I'm
like, "Oh, yeah, exactly. That's what I thought too." I was like, "Yeah, perfect." And then we dated for a few months, you know? And she's like, "Yeah, you should come meet my parents." I'm like, "Okay." And then, like, you know, walk in and I see like some trophies and like stuff like that inside. And I'm like, what is your parents do? And then she's like, "Oh, my dad's a producer."
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
well she didn't lie, she's not in the film industry.
exactly. And so I was just like, at that point I was like, "Oh man," I was like, that's like the biggest hilarious plot twist,
right? You're like, "I don't think you understood what I meant."
Yeah. Luckily he works in animation and I work in live action, so it's all good.
That's good.
but it was just really really funny, but it's been kind of like cool too, just in a sense that like how small of a world it is.
Absolutely.
And
totally.
Like and also just like hearing about certain like small indie problems, and even like when I was working on Parallel Forest and like that sort of stuff, is like all these basically what you'd think are indie problems, but are common across every project.
Yeah.
Like there's always problems with, you know, contracts, financing, cast schedules, and like,
exactly.
Like no matter the scale, even if you have like $4 to $5 million, you're still going to have those problems.
Yep. No, totally.
And so like, that's what I find also very important for new filmmakers. Like for myself, I still consider myself like somewhat new, but at the same time, like you have to, in my opinion, you have to find your own voice and kind of get comfortable with yourself as a like director or producer, absolutely, like whatever you want to do.
Absolutely.
And like find your own voice. And like, I'm a huge advocate against film school, funny enough, but it's certain ones. Like there's, I know I heard some mixed things about like Vancouver Film School, and I know Capilano's program down here is great. Like they built sound stages for their students and provide them like dollies and a bunch of other stuff. And they make sure they have reels for when they graduate. But like some film schools I've noticed teaches you how to direct other people's movies and not have your own voice. Because I was like, well, here's like how they made Citizen Kane. Here's like how they made El Mariachi. And like, yeah, like look at all these famous directors. But it's not teaching you how, like, what you need to do to make a film. Like, they're not teaching you that much about coverage.
Teach you the actual art form.
Exactly. And finding your own voice as a filmmaker.
Right. Right. Yeah, I know. I hear what you're saying. I mean, again, that's what our Tornado is all about, is helping that person not only find their creative vehicle, but assure that they find them while they do it themselves, you know? And so that way they release whatever's inside of them out into their creation, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Oh, exactly. And even if at the end of the day, when you make something and you submit it to festivals, in my opinion, a lot of people don't really see how much a short is actually seen once it hits festivals. Like if you submit it a bunch of festivals, like hundreds of people see it. So many people see it, like even thousands. Like for I Loved Her First, we submitted it to over 100 festivals in the first month.
Wow. Wow.
Like in the first month alone, we got over 23 selections.
No kidding.
Two honorable mentions, three semifinalists, and two award wins.
Nice. Well, there you go. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. And like, I know some people can't afford all these festival fees and whatnot, but I know for some festivals, if you reach out, they'll give you a waiver code, but it also depends on your marketing. Film marketing is so important, even more important. So than, in my opinion, than the movie itself.
Yeah, I hear you.
The only reason I say that is because no matter how bad a movie is, as soon as you got that $12, they can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
So you just take their money, learn from it.
And hopefully they liked it.
Exactly. Hopefully they liked it. If they didn't like it, that's their problem.
Right.
And just make sure your investors get paid back.
Yeah. That's a good approach, man.
Yeah. And like, just take it as a learning experience. Not everyone's going to like your work.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, some people are going to love your work, but it's just all about, learning and continuing on. But don't think that you're always a perfect filmmaker. Like everybody's always learning and constantly open. Like the best directors out there that I've met and whatnot are super chill and like very open, and they're still like open to collaboration and learning new things. And they don't think they're perfect at all.
Yeah, that's the way you have to be. Always have to be learning.
Exactly. Like then you'll get to a point where if you're doing reference checks, you can call up famous directors or email them and get weird replies where you're kind of just sitting here like shaking yourself going, did I really just call that person? And we know each other. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, no. So again, if you guys if you're looking forward to watching I Loved Her First, it's going to be at the Tornado Music and Film Festival held at Foxwoods Casino, August 26th, 27th, and 28th. Don't forget, there's going to be links everywhere to buy tickets, to see what's going on. Check out tornado.org. And Braden, do you have any final words for the audience? Any last things that you want to say?
Not really. Just thank you all so much for listening. And make sure to check out I Loved Her First at the film festival. And a huge shout out to the cast and crew of I Loved Her First. Without you guys, we would not be here. And we made a very, very beautiful short film. And I just wanted to thank our cast and crew on the podcast.
Awesome. So everyone, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Embrace your storm. See ya.
Tornado with Jonathan Nadeau. If you haven't yet, please subscribe now so you're first to hear new episodes with more stories of inspiration about the highs and lows of life and how embracing the storm is so much more fulfilling of a life than being crushed by the weight of the world. And until then, we hope you're inspired to do something, whether it's creating, participating, or learning, whatever leads you to your personal passion.